This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Doe Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
Joining me now is Dr. Catherine Haymans from the University of Edinburgh. Hello and thank you for joining us. You gave the plenary lecture on observing the dark universe. So can you first of all tell us what you mean by the dark universe?
Okay, so less than about 5% of our universe is made up of the stuff that we're familiar with on Earth. So the stuff that you and I are made up of, the Earth, the Moon, the stars, our solar system, our galaxy, the stuff that we can see, that's less than 5% of our universe, and the rest is dark. It's made up of two components, something that we call dark matter, that makes up roughly about a quarter of the universe, and the rest is dark energy, which is causing the accelerated expansion of our universe.
Okay, so dark matter, that kind of, in my head, makes me think of something that's kind of like our matter, but slightly different. Am I on the right lines?
Yep, you're on the right lines. So it says what it is on the can. It's dark, it's invisible. Now, it doesn't interact like the particles that you have in your chemistry lab, for example. So there's no sort of chemical interactions. We say that it's a weakly interacting matter particle. And really the only way that we experience dark matter is through its gravitational force. So let's take our own Milky Way galaxy. We've got lots of stars spinning round in our own Milky Way galaxy. If there wasn't a giant halo of dark matter surrounding our own Milky Way galaxies, those stars would simply fly out into the universe. We need the gravity of the dark matter around our own Milky Way galaxy to keep all of those stars spinning round and round.
So by looking at the velocities of the stars, so we have to know that there is something else there, there has to be.
Yeah, you can imagine, if you imagine a ball on a piece of string and you're spinning it round your head, the faster you spin that ball round your head, the tighter you're going to have to hold onto that string. That's exactly the same with the stars going round in our galaxy, except there's no string now, it's gravity. So the force of gravity is keeping all of those stars bound. And you can go and count all the stars up in your galaxy. We know roughly how much a star weighs, so we know roughly how much mass is in each galaxy just from the stars, and there's just not enough mass there to keep those stars going around. There's not enough gravity if it's just the mass that we see. So we infer that there's this halo of dark matter. Now, there's lots of other evidence for dark matter as well. Just looking at the distribution of galaxies in our universe, we wouldn't see this web and filamentary-like structure in the galaxies if there wasn't dark matter in our universe. And, of course, the most recent fantastic Planck results, which have such high significance, nailed down the cosmology of our universe, and you wouldn't be able to explain those results without a weakly interacting matter particle dominating the gravity in our universe.
So you said that Planck sort of pinned down the cosmology of our universe. Kind of, what do you mean by that?
So the Planck took observations of the very, very early universe, the cosmic microwave background, and it's a huge amount of data that they've taken, but they can fit that data, the measurements of the very early hot universe, with just six numbers that describe how much dark matter is in our universe, how much dark energy is in our universe, and the distribution of matter in the very early universe.
That's such a small number of parameters to explain our universe. So, but you said you could sort of tell by the distribution of galaxies. So is that sort of mapping them as you go further out into the universe, into the older universe?
Yeah, that's right. So if you make a simulation of dark matter, so we take our theory that dark matter is this weakly interacting matter particle, we can make a simulation of the dark matter. And what that tells us is we expect the dark matter to form a giant cosmic web, filaments and knots and voids. Now, because dark matter is the strong gravitational force in the universe, that's going to dictate where and when the galaxies form. So there's a new project called VIPERS, which has gone out and taken spectra of all of the galaxies. So it's mapped out the three-dimensional distribution of galaxies. There are many projects doing this at the moment, but VIPERS is one of the most recent ones that's come out, so you can Google that. And what you find is that the distribution of galaxies matches what we'd expect from our cosmological simulations of dark matter.
So are there any experiments that are designed to kind of try and detect this weakly interacting matter particle?
Yeah, so so we can go at this from two angles. So my research focuses on using something called gravitational lensing to detect dark matter. Now, what happens is that when light travels past a dense region of dark matter, that light gets bent. That was what Einstein's theory of general relativity told us, that mass bends space and time. Now, what happens is, as that light is bent, it distorts the images of distant galaxies. So we can go out and we can map very distant galaxies, and their light, as it travels towards us through all the dark matter in our universe, gets bent and distorted. So what it looks like when we look into the very distant universe, it looks like the galaxies are lining up with each other. You can imagine it as just like a dark matter's leaving a signature of the fact that it's there on the images of galaxies. And the more strongly aligned the galaxies are, the more dark matter there is. So we can use this technique to tell us where the dark matter is and how much dark matter there is there. So there's a project called the Canada-France-Hawaii Telescope Lensing Survey. You can look it up on www.cfhtlens.org, and there you will find the largest ever maps of dark matter that we've produced with this method. And again, what we find is that the dark matter is clumping in these knots and filaments and voids exactly as we had simulated. So our theory of dark matter has been confronted by direct observations.
That's brilliant. So how can you tell that galaxies kind of appear to be aligned because of gravitational lensing rather than if they're actually aligned?
Well, that's a very good question, because actually in the real universe we would expect galaxies to be slightly aligned. So when galaxies are forming, we don't really understand galaxy formation, but we do understand that when they're forming, it depends on the environment that they're in. So there's a theory called tidal torque theory, which says that as the gas collapses and forms a galaxy, it gets a spin, and that spin determines the shape of the galaxy. So imagine now two clumps of gas collapsing and forming galaxy in the same region of the universe, they're likely to have the same sort of shape. And that's something that we have to account for in our measurements as well.
But that's something you can do, you can distinguish between those two cases.
So we have to model it. So we have some models of how we expect galaxies to intrinsically align, so galaxies that are physically close to each other, and we have to account for that in our measurements as well. And the work that I presented here is the first time that we've actually been able to do that at the same time as measuring the dark matter.
How big a survey was it that you were doing?
Yeah, it's 150 square degrees. So each patch of sky, we had four patches of sky. So for 5 years, the Canada-France-Hawaii Telescope surveyed these four patches of sky, and they reserved the absolute best weather conditions to do it, because it's really tough to make this measurement. And so we've got a spring field, a summer field, an autumn field, and a winter field, and each one is roughly about the size of your palm held out at length on the sky, to give you an idea of scale. So in the grand schemes of cosmological surveys, this is actually quite small now. So the next project we're working on is called the Killer Degree Survey, which will be 100 times bigger. And that's already taking data. So in the next few years, we'll be publishing results with that. And then in 10 years' time, we're going to have Euclid, LSST, which are going to be doing this type of observation routinely across the whole sky. And that's going to be really fascinating to find out what results they're going to show.
This kilo degree survey, kind of whereabouts is that going to be based, and how long is that going to run for?
Yeah, so this is a brand new ESO public survey. It is on the VST telescope in Chile. And what this telescope does is it's routinely surveying a large area of the southern sky and in multiple optical bands, and it has a sister survey which is taken on the VISTA telescope, which gives us the near infrared data. So it's a great new survey, because it's spanning both the optical and the near infrared colour. So we're going to be doing lots of different types of science, looking at how galaxies form and evolve, and the stuff that I'm working on is of course looking at using this lensing technique to map out the dark matter on both large and small scales, looking at the dark matter around galaxies and clusters.
So the previous survey that was being done, is that still an ongoing project, or has that kind of been completed?
That has now been completed. So the CFHT lens survey is now completed, but it took us quite some time to analyse the data, because really this measurement is quite non-trivial. So you're trying to look for this alignment of galaxies, the signature that dark matter's left on the images of these galaxies. But when the light from these galaxies, they've travelled all the way through the universe and then they hit our Earth's atmosphere. So we're looking for this tiny distortion from dark matter. The light hits the atmosphere, and you know the nursery rhyme, twinkle, twinkle, little star. That's just the atmosphere making things twinkle. So the light comes through our atmosphere, then it gets bent and distorted by our telescope. And so we have to understand our telescope, instrumentation, and atmosphere to high precision to unravel all of that ground-based distortion in order to get back to the signature that dark matter's left. And so there's been major steps forwards in data analysis techniques in order to be able to make this measurement robustly. And now we've made those developments, we're now sort of ready to go with the next big survey.
Okay, so we've talked about the surveys that are detecting dark matter by sort of mapping galaxies. Are there any other experiments and any other surveys going on?
So we can, as astronomers, we can survey dark matter on the large scales. But you know, what we all really actually want to know is, what is this particle? What is this weakly interacting matter particle? And to that, we pass over to the particle physicists who are working in tandem to actually try and detect this dark matter particle. Now, quite excitingly, recently there's been a new collaboration of scientists within the UK, the UK Dark Matter Consortium, who have decided now on which instrument they're going to back next, which is the Luck Zeppelin experiment. Now, hopefully STFC is going to fund this because it's an amazing project. It's going to be 9 tons of xenon deep under the ground, about 5,000 feet under the ground in South Dakota. And basically this big chunk of xenon sits under the ground, and a weakly interacting matter particle will hopefully go through our Earth and interact with one of the xenon nuclei that releases some electrons, which then produce a little bit of light that can be detected. Now, they're weakly interacting matter particles, so it's really hard. Most of them, there's loads of dark matter particles flying through us right now. So most of them will not interact, but hopefully there'll be one direct collision, or several, so they can detect it. And then we will detect this dark matter particle. So construction's due to begin for that next year. So that's a really exciting new development for the UK direct dark matter detection community.
It's brilliant that they can design something like that that will hopefully detect this particle. Mm-hmm. Just out of curiosity, if it doesn't detect the particle, sort of where would the scientists go from there?
So the one thing is we know that the dark matter particle is weakly interacting, but we don't know how weakly interacting it is. And that's why, there have been lots of projects like this over the years where they've tried to make this detection and they haven't made it. And so what that means is it just brings down what we call the interaction cross-section, how weakly interacting this particle is. So this new project, Luck Zeppelin, is going to be 9 tons, so that's a lot of collecting area. But if that still doesn't detect anything, then that just means that this particle is even more weakly interacting than that. So they just keep building bigger and bigger detectors. We had a question in the plenary session yesterday of, what if it doesn't find anything? Has it all been worth it? But this sort of the technology that's being driven by this quest to find the dark matter particle is worth it. It's really worth all of this investment, if only to develop the new technologies that's having to be designed in order to do this sort of research.
Yeah, there's a lot of offshoots that come from doing new experiments. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much for telling us all about your amazing research, and I really hope everything goes well with the new experiments and the new surveys.
Thank you very much.